Welcome to the Bible Talks with Josh and Heather.
The Bible Talks is a show that discusses the Bible. We talk about it.
Deep theology. Now, look, you may not consider yourself like a deep theologian, but you do like the Bible, and that's what we talk about. That's kind of our wheelhouse.
We're Josh and Heather Tice. We love each other, and we love to talk, and we love our church, Southern Hills.
So we always begin with a little bit of fun. Let's get started.
All right, Josh. So today's fun question. If you could have any talent, what would it be?
What talents don't I have?
I should have brought this question up because I forgot that you are all talented.
I'm not all talented, but I am multifaceted in my talented abilities.
Such as?
Well, clearly I'm an athlete. I am suave. I've got fashion sense.
What's your favorite sport?
Well,
because I don't think I've seen
curling.
Any of your costumes.
I have a basketball costume.
How do you go sports? Tell me about that.
I have a football costume. Okay. What was the question?
What talent? If you could just instantly have any talent, what would it be?
If I could have any talent, what would it be? Oh, man. I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't thought about this. I'm so satisfied with my incredible gifts and abilities. What? Why are you shaking your head, Crystal? Our producer just shaking her head.
You should always want more.
I should always want more?
Yeah.
I am satisfied with the man God has created me to be.
Content, but not satisfied. Crystal just dropped a truth bomb
on us.
That's
true. I feel schooled. If I could have any talent at all. I know what yours
preaching.
Is going to be. Preaching?
I'm just kidding. You had that. Just kidding. You're
messed.
Fantastic. You're my favorite preacher, but I just
course,
thought it would be funny.
Every pastor's wife says that. They have to. It's written in the Bible somewhere. Look, that's insulting.
I know. I'm just teasing.
You know, I tell you, if I...
Oh, my word.
If I couldn't preach, yes, but I'm an amazing preacher.
I know. Let's move on. What would you really want? Because that was just a funny
I know what
for
yours
our
is.
Audience. You're welcome.
I know what yours
listeners.
Is.
Don't say mine.
No, I
get
what
to share mine.
Is.
Tell me yours first, then you can say mine.
I wish I was a better dentist.
Oh, come on. Why don't you
Why
take
you
these
groan?
Questions seriously?
Okay.
Oh.
I would say
Do you
our family
see what
a lot
I
of
deal
money
with?
If
Do
I
you
could
see
dent
what I'm living with, people? I love this man, but it is
think.
A challenge to love because he won't play my games.
Okay. If I was
I take them seriously.
More talented, I would love to be talented in everything I think of. I'm very what good at.
You know, I will say this. The more I think about this, you really are pretty satisfied with
yes.
stuff. Like, you
yes,
really don't have
you.
Desire. Like, there are so many things I wish I knew how to do, from cake decorating to dancing.
I do not care. Do not
to,
care.
You know,
hey, stop. Stop.
You know, to what, martial arts stuff.
What you just said.
I would do any of it.
I wish I was a dancer. I do. Because if I was a better dancer, I don't want to work on it. I don't want to take
yeah, no,
dancing
you don't.
Lessons. I've
We've
tried. But if I could just naturally have a talent to be an amazing dancer, I would definitely take that, because then when we went on vacation or we went to
Weddings.
A place, a wedding, then I could get out there with you and just get jiggy
and
with it.
And then I could work on it because you would like doing it because you'd already be
right.
good at it.
But because I'm not, I don't like working on it. So no. Yeah, I wish. Yes.
Okay.
I want the talent of
All
dance.
Right. That's good. I'm glad you came up with that because
yes.
I wanted you to find something.
Okay, what is it that you want the talent
Oh,
of?
My goodness. I want so many things. So many, y'all. And I think about it all the time. Like, I really wish I was tough and knew how to fight all the time.
Like
I wish
Black
I had,
Widow.
Yes, Black Widow's my hero.
Yeah.
And then spy skills, like, you know, all these things.
Like
and
Jason
then,
Bourne.
Yes. And then I wish I knew how to dance like Vera Ellen on White Christmas.
Like Fred Astaire.
And oh my goodness, to dance with Fred Astaire, there's a dream.
Maybe, no, dance like Fred Astaire.
No, with
like.
Fred Astaire, because then you don't have to know
preposition.
How to do anything.
Hold
like,
on.
Like, he does it all.
I didn't,
you just go along for the ride.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable
before.
Right now.
But anyway, but no, that is. I would choose none of those. If it's down to one thing, there
okay.
is one, and you know what it is. You were saying it a minute ago. Tell our audience what it is.
You want to sing.
Yes, I want to sing. There's
you want
a song
to have a voice
in my
of an
heart,
angel.
But
Instead,
when it comes
you have
out
the
my
voice.
Mouth,
you have a voice of a turtle.
It's not a song anymore. It's a croak. It's awful.
A frog.
And I've been listening to The Greatest Showman today. If you've not seen it, it is fantastic.
Right.
And great music in it. And I've been trying to sing along to it. And I don't sound like any of those people. Like, I try to sound like Michelle Williams, who plays the wife of P.T. Barnum. And I just, it's not happening. It's really sad.
You do sound...
And it's these beautiful songs.
There's, in the movie, there's this door that creaks shut.
Is that me? I'm the door.
It sounds like
you know, it is really, really bad, y'all. And I've tried for years. You know, in college, I wasn't a voice major. I was in advertising public relations is what I got my degree in. Spent a lot of time in the computer labs learning graphic design, stuff like that. But, and I loved drama. So I loved being in some plays and stuff on the side. But I actually took a class that wasn't on my schedule. Like, it made me have an overload. So I had to take more classes than I was supposed to. And it was a voice class because I really thought, I believed so much. Man, if belief could do it, I would be singing so well right now. I believed with all my little innocent heart that someone could find that voice that's down there deep inside me and could bring it out.
That talent can
be
taught.
The right teacher.
Yeah.
And
belief
I took that whole class and it was awful and it was hard. And I got a C minus in it, and it brought down my GPA, and which really hurt my heart, because then I was like, "That was dumb." Now my GPA is lower because of that. But we never found it. We searched and we searched, and it wasn't there.
You don't see. It's not belief. Belief is not enough. If belief was enough,
surgery
in the late '90s,
vocal cord surgery is what I'm looking for right now.
You can't get vocal cord surgery.
I am pretty sure someone has done it or is working on it. I'm going to Google it after this.
If you're one of our listeners and you do vocal cord surgery,
contact me. Give me a quote.
What are you talking about?
No, I think there's some way. Like, okay, I knew someone who could sing, and then she had an accident, and they had to do surgery on her vocal cords, and she's not able to sing now. But I'm like, maybe they could reverse it. Maybe there's something. If they can work on vocal cords, maybe they could just tweak it a little bit.
And then
it'll be there.
Look, if instead of surgery, go back to belief. Belief.
I need to just believe harder.
Believe harder. I don't know that belief works. In the late 90s, if belief would have worked, I would have been able to fly. Because I believed I could fly.
Yeah, I got nothing else to add to this conversation.
Don't you want
to
sing? I was trying to bring you into
the
song.
No, I don't want to sing because I'm too embarrassed.
I believe
I haven't had my
surgery
yet.
Sky.
Yeah, I haven't had my surgery yet. I'm not going to sing.
I dream about it every night and day.
Especially not with that song. That is not one I need to sing.
I think I got really loud there because Crystal jumped. Yeah, I'm sorry. All right.
Okay, on to more serious things.
Okay, so we're talking about parenting
today. If I could
have
any talent, it would be the talent of a great parent.
If I had any talent, it would be a parenting talent. I would learn to love more, to care more. To be selfish less.
That's your fear. Fear of caring too much, loving too much.
Yep.
No, I really am excited about today's discussion because we're going to talk about parenting, which I hope we'll do in future episodes as well. But today the focus is going to be
the four seasons
on
of
the
parenting.
Four seasons of parenting.
Yeah.
Because you never stop being a parent. But really, there are different focuses on different seasons. And we would say the seasons are age groups. So the age of your child.
Right. So we're talking about like the four seasons: spring, summer, autumn.
Please don't say autumn.
Spring,
it's fall,
summer,
we all know it.
Fall.
You're just making yourself look silly.
And winter, right? So there are four seasons, and we think there are four seasons of parenting as well, and they correspond. Spring, for example, is that 0 to 5 years age. It's that preschool and infant phase.
Right.
Summer is that
6 through 12.
Yep, ages 6 through 12, and it's that grade school age. We would call fall or autumn.
Fall. The
fall.
Teen years.
The teen years, right?
Yep, 13 through 19.
12, 13, all the way through 18, 19. And then you have the winter phase. That's where you're parenting an adult child, age 20 and above.
Mm. So we would say that in all these seasons, as a parent, we're called to love our children.
Yes.
But the way we love them, the way we focus on loving them, would have a slightly different emphasis on each season. So let's get right into this. I'm excited about this. I think you are going to enjoy it. And I'd love to hear which seasons you're in. If you will post it on our Facebook page, give us a comment on the Bible Talks with Josh and Heather. Let us know which season you're in. Or maybe other things that you think about those seasons, whether it's a question you have about that season that we can answer in a later podcast. Or if you have a comment about something else you've had to focus on during that season, We'd love to hear it. So starting with spring.
Spring is the time for babies and toddlers, right?
Yes, ages 0 to 5. And in the spring, when you think about spring, that season, everything is new and exciting. Everything's fresh and brand new. Even if this is not your first child, but you have another, maybe it's your second, third, or eighth or tenth or whatever in this season, your eighth or tenth child, they're different from your other children. Their personality is going to be different. And it makes every spring vibrant and new.
Right. In this stage, you show love. Here's the key word for this stage. You show love by training your children. Training is the key word.
Yeah. Train means to dedicate. It means you're doing all of this because they're God's. And you know that you have the responsibility of raising them. What we're talking about here is training them for what God has for them, teaching them, we'd say, immediate obedience and consequences.
That's what the Bible says in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So when we talk about training, we're talking about the goal of training is to bend their will toward obedience. Human beings have a natural bent toward disobedience. We have a rebellious sin nature that is passed on from our fathers to from children to children. We talked about this when we talk about humanity and the sin nature in previous episodes and in episodes to come. If mankind has a sin nature, we pass that sin nature on to our children. This is why we don't have to teach our children to lie or to steal or to be disrespectful. It comes naturally.
Yes.
So they have a bent toward disobedience. Training attempts to bend their will toward obedience. We want them to learn to obey right away, even when they don't understand why.
And I would think about this a lot. Training, I will say this, it takes a lot of dedication.
Yeah.
We said that's what the word means, and it's true. It took a lot of consistency, a lot of my mental focus to consistently, over and over again, teach that child to obey every time. But I remember thinking, I'm doing this because I want their response to be obedience. Like you said, even when they don't understand, because one day God is going to be the one that they're answering to directly. And I want their response to him to always be obedience, even when they don't understand his commands.
Correct. Now, in this phase, we talk about training. Now, there's some practical ways in which we can do it. I remember Jonathan, for example, when he was just a boy, very young, even before he could talk, he was always toddling around and trying to grab my phone. Back then, I had a Razor. You remember it was before smartphones.
Oh, yeah,
it was
a cool
flip
dude.
Phone. It was cool, man. It was a Razor phone. And I remember my son would, Jonathan would try to grab it all the time. I remember one time I was sitting on the couch and he walks up to the coffee table and he's looking at me in the eye. And off to the right hand side, the phone was sitting there. And while staring me in the eye, he reaches to his right, attempting to grab the phone without me noticing him. And suddenly I said, no. A couple minutes later, he was underneath the coffee table, reaching up from underneath, trying to grab it. No. And this is the natural tendency of a child. They want to grab what they're not allowed to. So when we say training, we literally mean, and this might feel offensive to some, we literally mean training them like you would an animal.
How dare you, sir?
Well, let me try to make our point. Train them. Look, if your dog could be trained, your two-year-old can be trained. If you can teach your dog not to eat the treat until you snap your finger, you can teach your two-year-old not to eat the treat. And this is a huge problem. Parents are unwilling to do this. And by the way, that's why when they get to school, they're insane. They're driving their teachers crazy. So train them. I'll give you an example of how we started. By the way, we would say this is probably the most important phase because it sets a foundation for the other phases.
And let me add something here. You mentioned the training with a dog. It's interesting to me because when you go out to a dog park and there is a dog that really obeys his owner, nobody's like, man, you're so lucky. You have such a good dog.
That's a great
You know,
point.
They don't say that. They're like, how did you do that? Did you have training school? What methods did you use? But if you have trained your child, parents, just know that you are
People
going
are
to be
say,
called
oh, you're
lucky.
So lucky.
It's
Look
not,
at your children.
Yes.
They're so obedient. Has nothing to do with them. It is all us.
Yes. Well, God teaching us
no.
to teach them,
no.
following his
it's
commands.
Us. Yes. No, of course. It's God's grace
it's
and God's
work.
Truth.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of dedication, as you said. So here's an example for parents with a 9-month-old, a 12-month-old, a 15-month-old. One of the things we would do is called the M&M test. And when it comes to training, we would sit our toddler on our lap in front of the kitchen table, and we would sit there. And as we would, I'd open a pack of M&Ms and put it out in front. And as they sat there, the child would naturally reach out to the colorful, yummy treats. And they would go to reach for it, and we would say, no. And they would shockingly look up with a look in my eyes, no, don't touch. And they would pull their hand back. Then I would reach out my hand, and I would take an M&M and eat it. And then they would reach out their hand to take one. I would say, no. Then I'd reach out my hand, and I would take one and eat it. You say, what are you doing? You're eating in front of the kid. Exactly. It's not about the M&Ms. It's about the training. Now, you say, what if he didn't obey and he tried to touch the M&M? Well, if he reaches out and tried to touch the M&M and he touches it, and when I said no, I'll flick his fingers. Flick. And he would suddenly begin to pout and whine a little bit. I would say, no, don't touch daddy's. And then I would eat the M&M, and he would not. We would do this until we could eat the entire bag of M&Ms without the child touching. You say, that's terrible. It is. It's terrible if it were about M&Ms.
But and for those of you who are greatly concerned right now for the Tice children, don't worry. Over the years, they have had many, many, many M&Ms. They are not lacking for M&Ms.
That's right.
In fact, we probably should do this again because they need to cut back their sugar intake.
What will happen, yeah, that's probably true. And what will happen in the future is they'll have many more M&Ms and they'll be able to buy whatever they want because they'll learn how to obey their bosses and obey society and obey police officers.
Yes, that's the greater principle.
And so their life will be very blessed in life because they've learned the principle of thinking obedience.
You know, and it's not just for success in life. It's even for safety. If you have children at a young age, I'm teaching them obedience is so important. Some of you may can relate to this. I've been to parks and different things. And,
right.
and you have to know, Josh can verify this. I am not one of those scared bystanders. You know, those parents that are always freaking out about everything. Oh, my goodness, the baby. No, I'm not one of those people. I'm pretty, am I
but
not? I'm
seen,
pretty relaxed.
We've all seen this idea of a toddler running into the street.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
The parents,
the parent
no,
says, come,
no.
and the child wants to play tag or chase. And they go running off into, I've seen it so many times, where they start running towards traffic, towards a crowd, towards water they could fall into. And the reason that they do that is the parent has not invested that time in training. I did this quite a bit with our children. In the morning time after bath and everything had kind of settled down, they're dressed. And before we'd play or do anything else, I would take this time intentionally as a mother. And I would set the child about 5 feet away from me. And I would say to the toddler, come to mommy. And, you know, at first you have to teach them. When they're learning what these words mean, I would take their hand, I would pull them towards me and give them a hug and say, good boy, good girl. Then I would put them back. I'd say, Jonathan, come to mommy. And we would do this and we'd practice. And, you know, sometimes they get bored and they want to go a different way or they want to play the game. And then there's discipline that's brought in because I have to teach them immediately. No, you have to do what I say.
Training takes time and dedication.
Yes.
Here, let me give out one last hint in regards to in regards to parenting children that are very young. One of the best things you can do is teach them no by not allowing them to control your schedule at home. What do I mean by that?
Yeah.
Your children, at some point, need to be put in their own bedroom.
Yeah. That's a tough one for some of you to hear, but it'll be helpful.
It is difficult. So many times in counseling, I've been shocked by people who say, well, my child still sleeps in the bed with us or in the same room. I recently talked with a man and woman who their child still sleeps in their bedroom, and the child is 9.
Yeah.
For 9 years. This is a problem. The best thing for your infant or toddler is for their mother and father to be able to be alone together at night so they can be intimate and don't need the process. You say, but they cry in the bed by themselves. Hey, they're going to survive. Mm. Let them cry themselves to sleep, and you get to sleep yourself. Mm. Let's give some resources for this age group.
Yeah. So we're going to give a resource, a book recommendation for every single season. And for this season, I want to recommend Dr. James Dobson's books. There's two different ones. One is Bringing Up Boys. The other one is Bringing Up Girls. Now, this book, honestly, it doesn't just focus on the spring season. But I found that some of the most helpful principles and the talking about the emotional needs and how to train a child are found in this book. So it's a great resource if you have children that are in the spring.
Right. I would also say a nice resource would be at your church is to do a baby dedication. Why? Because I think prayer is a resource. We've got all sorts of tips and tricks, but reality is, as Heather said, it's the grace of God. Mm. And through prayer, we need to ask God's blessing upon our parenting. And so one of the best ways to do this is at a baby dedication ceremony where you're able to stand up in front of the whole church and you're able to say, pray for us, and I'm dedicating mm-hmm. myself, or we're dedicating ourselves to raising this child in the Christian faith. And I would say that's a huge resource that I would encourage.
All right, moving on to summer, ages 6 through 12.
Yeah, this is a good time.
Life is busy in the summertime. It's active, full of new hobbies and interests, school projects, and fun. I would also say, and you got to stay with me, this is not metaphorical. Here's where I'm going to get literal. Summer gets smelly, because when you got kids ages 6 through 12, they start smelling kind of funky.
They
am I right?
Stink. Yes,
so
this is
true. I just thought that was funny, because it goes with summer. When you get the heat of summer and you get kids 6 through 12.
Bravo.
Whew. Yes. All right.
Brava.
Brava. So What is the focus? How do we love children who are in the summertime?
If in the first phase you love by training, in this phase you love by teaching. Teaching is the key word here.
Mm. That's true.
Heather just took a drink of her coffee. Heather didn't know. Heather just took a drink.
No, and you left me hanging.
Heather just took a drink of her coffee, and then there was dead air.
Y'all didn't think we ran this podcast just on our own energy, did you? You had to know.
I didn't want it to go by without our audience knowing why.
Okay.
You put your coffee down.
Okay, it's down. I'm so sorry. Okay. Okay, really, what Josh is saying is true here. We have to teach kids 6 through 12. That was not me. That was my husband. He wants you to know he's got coffee, too. Do you know, back to our topic here. It's interesting. There's a big misconception out there that we have to teach our teenagers values, because our teenagers are making decisions and decisions that will impact their life. And they're
this
making it based
point.
On values that they formed during the teen years. They are making decisions in the teen years that will affect the rest of their life. And they are making them based on their values. But the problem is their values aren't formed in the teen years. They're making decisions off values that they form between the ages of really 8 through 12, 6
we
through 12.
We propose that your children's values are being formed during grade school, not during the teen years.
So if you're waiting till the teen years to begin teaching your children the biblical principles, you're missing the boat.
So teach them. Teach them. How do you teach them? This is done through spending intentional time together mm-hmm. and having real, honest, spiritual conversations.
Now, Deuteronomy talks about this. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, verses 18, 19, it says, God says, therefore, you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul. He said, I've given you the truth of life. I've given you the principles. Now you teach them to your children. Speak of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. So what you're saying, Josh, is that intentional time together. Look at all the times God says to spend with our kids. He says, you need to teach them my ways, my truth.
Yeah.
When you're sitting down at the dinner table, when you're taking a walk in the park, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, you need to surround your children with me and my truth.
Here's an example. An example would be if you're driving down the road and you have young children, ages 6 to 12, you see a homeless person. There are two aspects of teaching mm-hmm. now. The first aspect is the Proverbs perspective. The Proverbs perspective would look and say, my son, take a look at this homeless man. How did he get into this situation? What happened in his life to allow him in this situation? Mm-hmm. Then there's the Jesus perspective, and that is, what can we do to help this person? So mm-hmm. there's so much teaching that could be done no matter where you are and what you ought to do. But don't wait until later to teach this. Ages mm-hmm. 6 through 12 is the time to do this.
Now, a story of something that we've done, here's a practical way to implement this, is that we've tried to surround our kids with the truth of God through music. In fact, we had the opportunity to attend a Christian music festival last year with our kids.
So much fun.
And we had a church member who's highly involved in this, and he hooked us up with the opportunity to meet one of the artists that our girls love. It's Scarlett's favorite singer, Miss Jamie Grace.
Yeah, Jamie Grace is somebody we've really wanted to put in front of our daughters, primarily because of her list of music that she has. Mm-hmm. Name a couple of the songs, Heather, that
I love this.
We have
and
our
I gotta tell you,
memorize.
If you're a parent, you don't know, you need to look this up and check out some of the lyrics to this music. I wish I had had this. One of my favorites is there's a song called Just a Friend, and it talks about what every teenager is going to go through, and that's a crush. You can't help but have a crush and attraction to people.
Well,
there's nothing
wrong
with that.
Well, right now, our girls are 9 and 12, and they're always giggling
about
boys.
Oh, they've been
boys.
Crushing on people for a while, and it's always changing. It just happens. And so I love that instead of the secular view of, this is what my entire life is all about, and if he doesn't like me, what will I do? I'll just be miserable. This says, you didn't like me as more than a friend, but we can be just friends, and God's got a better plan. My life is not dependent upon you, but, we'll be friends, and God can do something wonderful through
this. Jamie Grace has another song that our kids
so good.
Love. And I remember hearing it at the concert after we met her. I was like, this is awesome. Definitely want to get this mm-hmm. into our girls' heads. It's called White Boots. And she talks about these white cowboy boots that she's going to wear on her wedding day. And the whole idea is she's mm-hmm. talking about maintaining her virginity until marriage. Well, yeah. yes. So we want not only to put those Christian yeah. words into their minds and train those values, we also want to put people in their life they can look up to yeah. and say, that's the type. Look, I don't want our girls looking to somebody like Miley Cyrus and thinking, mm-hmm. that's what I want my life right. to be. So find those
And these those principles, values. By the way, music is a great way, because when our girls rise up in the morning, they wake us up, because upstairs we'll hear them. Each one has a CD player and we'll begin to hear their music being played. And I think how great that when they're getting ready, they're hearing songs like we just mentioned, and My First Love, which is all about how the Lord provides that relationship, their identities in Him and God Girl. And at night when they go to sleep, see, they're being surrounded. They're building these core values because they're hearing the truth in music.
Here's an example of a conversation that we've had with our children to give you an idea of teaching. We talk about how to deal with mean kids. Now, everybody out there knows exactly what it's like to come across a mean adult. Mm. And everyone that's ever met a mean adult has also remembered meeting a mean kid, yeah. right? There's always mean people in life. So whenever yes. So we've had children come in, and at dinner time, they'll tell us, oh, such and such happened today, and such person said this to me. Mm. And instead of picking up the phone and calling their parents, or instead of calling the principal or the teacher, making that their responsibility, we teach our children during this ages of 6 to 12, we teach our children, listen, there's always going to be mean people. This is how to deal with a mean person, and to not freak out about it, but teach them how to ignore them, how to walk away, how to say what they need to say, but also how not to start a fight.
Right. So a great resource for the summer, we would say, would be 6 ways to keep the little in your girl, or 6 ways to keep the good in your boy. These are both by Dana Gresh.
Yes.
And they really do focus. She focuses a lot on purity. And other values. I'm reading the one for girls right now, and it's kind of for the ages that we're talking about. 8 through 12 is the focus. And it's talking about instilling these values. And it even talks about materialism. How do you deal with that in the world trying to sell your daughter on who she is and what she needs? So these are fantastic resources by Dana Gresh.
So during the summertime, it's all about teaching them values
yeah.
and life skills, emotional and spiritual life skills that they're going to need later yeah. on in their life.
And a great resource, again, is your local church. Have your kids in church. And I would say even sometimes parents miss the boat. I know there's something to be said for going to church as a family when your kids are young and everybody's sitting in the service. But if your church has a children's program
yes.
that is teaching, it's not just doing fun events, but it's teaching biblical truths on their level.
Right.
Don't miss out, because that's going to help your kids. It's going to help them begin to form these values. And see, the other kids are also going to be making these same choices.
So we've talked about the spring, that's babies and toddlers. We've talked about summer, that's grade school. Now let's talk about fall, the teenage years.
Oh, the teenage years. Fall is when the winds of change come. It's what season is all about. It's about change. Now, this can be a beautiful season, but also very brisk. There's going to be signs of detachment, just like leaves falling off the tree. Now, I will say, in literal seasons and also this metaphorical, fall is my favorite season.
Yeah.
We are just entering this. Our son's been there for a while. Our middle child, Savannah, is going to be in youth group this year. So we are really just entering the phase of fall, the season of fall with parenting. And I love it. I think it has been so much more enjoyable. People are going to tell you, oh, you'll hate the teen years. They're terrible. They can be challenging at times. There are changes, but it can be a wonderful and exciting season, because you begin to see the different colors of who God has made them to be, how He's working in their life, the direction that He starts to lead them, the conversations you can have with them. Beautiful.
Exactly my thoughts. If spring is about training and summer is about teaching, then fall is all about testing. See, allowing decisions to be made in a safe environment. Here's the idea, like walking on a tightrope with a net underneath, right? If you're yeah. walking on this tightrope with a net underneath, that's the teenage years. When they get out into adulthood, there is no net. So if they fall, they're going to make mistakes.
Right.
They're going to fall and die. Okay, but how do they prepare for that? That is, yeah. you during those teen years are allowing them to make decisions where if they do fall, there's a safety net.
And some of the ways that you can help love them by testing them is by asking their opinions about things.
Yeah, okay. This is what we mean by testing them. Instead of sitting them down telling them what to think, at this stage you should be asking them what they think. For example, recently, as the recording of this podcast, there was a bombing in Syria. And instead of sitting down and ignoring the conversation, just talking about school, we want to sit down with Jonathan and say, Jonathan, did you hear about the bombing in Syria? What do you know about chemical warfare?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Hey, did you hear about what's going on at the White House right now? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Did you hear about what was said? Did you hear about what's going on? And to hear his opinions, you say, why would you ask their opinions?
And then you follow up those questions to try to help them begin to connect their decisions and their thoughts
to the values,
to their values. So
that they were trained in.
What does God say about that? Right. What do you think a good king like King David would do? What would a good leader do? What does God want us to
right.
do?
Right. So it's really testing. You're testing them on their knowledge, but you're also testing them on their thoughts. Look, this is a huge aspect.
Also, you in the stage of testing, you don't want to save them from their mistakes. Part of testing and learning, the reason you have that is that you're going to make mistakes and you learn from those mistakes.
God gave the teenage years to you to allow to test them so that when they get in the real world, look, in the real world, nobody's going to save you from your stupidity. You make a stupid decision and you live with the stupid decision. The reason there are people in their 20s and 30s now who think that somebody's going to come in and rescue them is because their parents always came in and rescued them.
Yeah.
You need to allow your child to live with the stupid decisions that he's made. I'll give you an example. And whenever they're 13 to 18, those are small, stupid decisions.
Yeah.
So my son was dying. Jonathan was dying for an MP3 player.
For those of you who don't know what it is, it's like the modern-day Walkman.
Right.
Okay, remember how we had the Walkman? We were so cool with our Walkman.
I'm guessing if people are listening to this as a podcast, they know what it is. If you're listening on the radio, I don't know. But
radio is hip and cool.
It is hip and cool. I'm just saying. An MP3 player. So when we were kids, it was a Walkman because we were, you know, because we're old. But now they call them MP3 players. Anyway, so he's wanting one really bad. Can I get an MP3 player? We don't allow our children to have smartphones. A lot of his friends do. So he wants to be able to listen to his music. So we said, okay, at Christmas you can have one. And his grandfather bought him an MP3 player. And the problem was, it wasn't but about 6 weeks later that his MP3 player fell into the bathtub.
And he had been told by a wise mother, that's probably not the best idea.
Right. So he comes downstairs with this MP3 player all wet and dripping. Uh-huh. And he's like, what did I do? And the answer is, you're an idiot. Okay. You dropped it.
We're all idiots, y'all, when we're 13 to 19.
Yes. And we're probably beyond.
Yes.
So here's the temptation. Heather and I looked at that. We're not wealthy people, but we also looked at it and thought, well, man, there was a temptation to say, let's just replace it.
Yeah.
He's always wanted this. He's been waiting a long time. Mm-hmm. His pop gave it to him. We ought to replace it. But, you know, it was hard to resist that temptation and say, no, this is a time of testing. He doesn't get one. He needs to learn that when it breaks, it breaks. And now you can save up and buy another one if you choose to.
Yeah, and I will add to this, be sympathetic through these times. We weren't like, well, that you learned your lesson now. I mean, that is the worst thing to say to a teenager.
That's a good point.
We've all been there where we've made a foolish decision or something's happened and we can't replace it. And instead of saying, oh, I'm so sorry. That's too bad. We tried putting it in rice, you know.
Right, we tried to help, put our arm around, said, we're sorry, man, this is really
maybe
bad.
Maybe for Christmas or your birthday or something.
Yeah, save up some money and you'll get a new one, but God's giving you a lot of other stuff.
And then you follow that up, say by allowing them to make decisions. And again, it goes back to that safety net. You're not just allowing them to decide everything, but during these years, it's important to give them the test of making decisions and then living with those consequences. So for example,
Jonathan was invited by one of our church members who does commercials for local commercials for a lot of businesses. One of the businesses he does commercials for is Roberto's Tacos. Oh, if you've never had a Roberto's Tacos, you need to go.
Now I want tacos.
So there'll be commercials coming out in the 2018 to 19 year where Jonathan will be there eating tacos.
Stuffing his face.
Stuffing his face with
like
tacos,
the
which is pretty
teenage
cool.
Teenage boy he is.
So he was so excited to be asked to do this. I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to be so famous. This is going to be great. Well, he comes up to me after filling his face with tacos. He comes up to me and at the end of the day, at the end of the shoot, and he had a $100 check. He's like, I got paid. I'm like, whoa, dude. I've been trying to teach him the value of a dollar and work ethic. This did not help.
That was not the lesson we
intended. He got paid $100 for eating tacos.
We were thinking pull weeds, not not eat tacos.
So anyway, what do we do with this situation? Well, he had $100. And so instead of us telling him what he had to do with the money, Heather came to him and said, well, you've got some choices.
Yeah. We didn't just say go spend it wherever. We were trying to teach this with our children. You can't just go to Walmart and buy whatever you want. We want them to think about it and make good decisions. So we had talked about it. Josh had said, why don't you save that and you can use it on vacation? Well, we talked about it and we decided to give them the option. We said, you've been wanting to replace your MP3. You could do that. It's going to take all your money. But then on vacation, you have to remember there may be something you want at the theme parks and places we're going. You're not going to be able to get that if you spend now.
So what did he end up doing? He thought about it for a couple of days, and then he said, I'm going to buy a new MP3 player. Mm-hmm. And so in that moment, we were able to solve several problems with one storyline. And really, what an incredible thing. Mm-hmm. So overall, understand, don't panic.
Yeah.
This is a time where the human brain is completely rewiring itself.
Yes. The studies have been shown, and I'm going to reference a resource in a minute that talks a great deal about this. But basically, during the teen years, the human brain completely remodels itself, starting from the back all the way to the front. It's rewiring, it's transitioning, it's getting rid of things it doesn't need, and it's building super highways to stuff it does need. But I would say with this, we got to realize, when our children are little, this is the thing that I've learned. When my children were toddlers, I knew that their brains were physically growing and there was a lot of learning going on. And I was ready to invest a lot of time teaching them. I didn't realize that when the teen years came, I would just need to invest just as much time because of all that's going on within their brain. Use stories. Help your child. One of the ways that you can help their brains grow is to teach them by telling them stories. Tell them about your childhood. Tell them about the decisions you made that were good and that were bad. Talk to them about friends and people around them that are making wise choices or maybe not. And say, how did they get there? Why do you think your friend had that happen to them? So begin teaching them through stories. The resource I mentioned is Your Teenager is Not Crazy. That's by Jeremy and Jerusha Clark. Your Teenager is Not Crazy is an excellent resource for your teenager.
All right, so we've dealt with already the spring, summer, fall, and now we're moving into the winter stage. The winter stage is parenting an adult child. Some of you are right now parenting 20-year-olds and above.
Yes.
And you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, is my job over? And the answer is your job is not over, but it has shifted dramatically.
Yes. Winter is a quieter season, much more peaceful. The snowy characteristics cause things here to slow down. For some, this season brings new warmth in relationships. For others, the season may feel icy and sometimes even lonely.
Right. This season, if there's a key word, you love them not by training, not by teaching, not by testing. You love them by treasuring. What
that
do you mean,
is
treasuring?
Such a good way to say this. That sums up what you should do in the parenting adults.
Yeah. What we mean by that is so oftentimes what we've seen in our counseling when Heather and I deal with parents of adult children, now they have grandchildren, and they look back and there's a lot of guilt. They didn't do it properly in these other phases. They didn't teach them and train them and test them properly. And now they're trying to play catch up. And maybe that's where you are right now. You're trying to play catch up with your adult children, and they're not living the way you think they should, or they're not walking with God. And so now you overabundantly try to teach them and train them and test them, and it's not the right stage.
No.
And all you're doing is pushing them away.
Yes.
And so we gotta warn you, don't do that. Now you're in the phase of purely treasuring them. What do you mean by treasuring them? We're talking about treasuring the time you do get to be with them.
Yes.
Treasure who God made them to be. Treasure the relationship as a friendship, not as one where you have to teach them.
That's really, really good. Too often we focus on the unimportant things. We get frustrated that they're not living their life in a way that we think they should. They're not voting for the right person, or they're not doing the right kind of job and whatever. And, or they're even sometimes we look at the sin areas that they've got and we're frustrated with that. And we just want to correct all these things. And sometimes we don't even focus on the heart of the issue. Like if they're living in sin, sometimes they're not even saved. Forget trying to fix all these externals. Pray for their salvation and just love them.
Right.
Love them to Jesus. Treasure them. Treasure who God made them to be. I love that you said that, Josh, because even a messed up, broken person, you can see how the Creator has gifted them, what He intended for them, and you can value who he truly made them to be.
Value the little bit of time that you do get mm-hmm. and treasure every moment. Allow them to live their own life and spend time praying for them.
Oh, that's
Don't
so
undervalue prayer. Let me give you an example. I got permission from my family to do this because it is such a perfect example of this. Sometimes parents have not trained their children and taught them properly, so there's a lot of guilt, so they try to push it all in this phase. Sometimes they have done well as they've children mm-hmm. have grown, but then the line between childhood and adulthood is so blurry. Sometimes good parents make mistakes.
It's hard to transition from teaching and testing and all that to treasuring.
To treasuring. The best example that we can give is one mistake that my parents made. So those who know my parents know them to be wonderful parents. But my parents, one time, it was the very first time they had received a grandchild.
Yes.
And Matthew and Brianna had a three-week-old Ashlyn in their home.
First grandbaby
of
many
ever.
To come.
And this line between childhood and parent and adulthood is so hard to define. And sometimes parents who are becoming grandparents don't know what their role is. And so in the middle of the night at 3:00 in the morning, my brother receives a phone call from Dave and Anna, his parents. Well, when you get a phone call at 3:00 in the morning, what's going on? You pick up the phone. Hey, is everything okay? Is everybody okay? And it was my father on the line. And you could hear my mother in the background saying, David. Are they on the line? And my father said, we have a concern. My brother said, what is it? Is everybody okay? Who died? Nobody died. Matthew, we are concerned that you're not feeding Ashlyn enough. At 3:00 in the morning.
Yes.
Well, okay, we've crossed a line here.
Mm.
My brother did exactly what you should do in that scenario. He said, thank you, Dad, and he hung up.
Yeah.
Now, why? Why? Here's why. Because incredible parents sometimes forget where that line is. And you move from teaching and training to treasuring.
Yeah, two things I want to add there. First of all, shout out to Mom and Dad. Thank you for making that mistake with Matt and Brianna and not with us.
Yay!
And then secondly, I would say that goes along with the biblical principle. Our children are supposed to leave, and if they get married, cleave. They're going to form a new family unit that is biblical. That means they're going to do things differently. They're going to spend their vacations maybe a different place than you want them to. They're going to train differently, their children.
Right, and if they're wise, they'll at times ask for advice. But don't offer it, and don't offer it until you have the moment to treasure it when they do ask.
Yes.
Right.
Great principle. A great book, a great resource for this stage is How to Really Love Your Adult Child by Gary Chapman and Ross Campbell.
Great book.
Yes. So this has been a fun little chat.
It has.
Hopefully it's been helpful to you. I do want to do more podcasts that include biblical parenting. So if you have questions or maybe we address something you'd like to hear more about, please
email
contact us. Yes. How do they do that, Josh?
You can email me at pastor@southernhillslv.com.
And you can email me at heather@southernhillslv.com.
And if you email us, put in the subject line for the Bible Talks, and we'll be able to address your question. And remember, each and every one of you, what is true today is always true when the Bible talks.
We'd better listen.